Hello, hello, listeners. This is Sean Sterling, and this is the Edwin Popert Film Club.
Yay.
It's another podcast, another movie watched, another lesson learned, perhaps. And I've got everyone here with me. I am, of course, Sean Sterling, and to my left is Seth Milstein.
Hello, Sean.
And across from me is Kevin Werkheiser.
Hey.
And also sort of across from me is Chris Tognati.
I just lost the game.
Well, here he is. And to my right is Sean Hurlburt.
Ladies and gentlemen.
All right. And the movie we're going to be talking about today is Leatherheads, which we just saw. But I should note that it's a bit of a controversial podcast because we've once again sort of strayed from our rules. See, the basic idea for the podcast is that we all go see a movie together. And then after we see the movie, we race back to our apartment, and then we set up camp, and then we podcast about it. It's very visceral. It's as I dubbed it last time, passion podcasting. But we hit a snafu because Seth, I believe you saw the movie independently.
I did see the movie independently. I had scheduling conflicts.
He had scheduling conflicts, so it's gonna happen. But explain why it happened, Seth. Explain why it happened.
Well, I in addition to being a member of the club. I also, I write reviews for my school's newspaper, and I had to review another film, so, to have time to write that review, I had to do this.
That is exciting. Also, you know, we've got another segment of Chris's, forgettable villains from forgettable films coming up.
That's true.
Also, we've got a new segment coming up for you, which, you know, I will christen later, and, yeah, it's gonna be an exciting podcast.
Yeah,
it's gonna be an exciting night, so Leatherheads coming up soon. We are back, and we are ready to talk about Leatherheads, but I'm curious, what is Leatherheads about? What is this movie, and who's in it?
Well, Leatherheads is the new film from George Clooney, a current It Boy at the moment.
It Boy for the last 15 years.
Yes, he can never quite break that bubble just yet. He brings us yet again another film to showing how much he loves previous decades. It stars himself, Renee Zellweger, and John Krasinski. It deals with the early ages of football and it coming to be, but in amongst it is a love triangle, intrigue, and just good old-fashioned fun.
Debatably.
I'm gonna nominate Seth to start us off.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, it would be hard for me to not like this movie because I love the 1920s and I love football movies and I really like George Clooney. So, you know. And I can find all of those things in one place with Leatherheads. But, yeah, it had just the real nice 1920s feel and the nice, very kind of idealized, sort of exaggerated, cartoonish feel to it that really, it was just, that pleased me a lot. It was good-natured, it was funny, and, it's over. I mean, it wasn't a 10, but it was very good. I probably like it more than any movie we've reviewed thus far.
I see. Well, Kevin, what did you think?
I did not particularly like it. I saw what you're saying.
The wet blanket.
I just rewatched Good Night and Good Luck this week, just coincidentally.
That's a very good movie.
And it is such a phenomenal movie. That sort of it was the wet blanket was watching Leatherheads after
I
watched that again.
I can see that.
But also just, I mean, there were. I was on board, and then I was off board, and I was on board, and then I was off board. So it wasn't like a terrible movie-going experience. Mm-hmm. And I think if you saw the trailer and you thought that you would like it, then you definitely would, because it was much better than the trailer.
It was, yeah.
But
the trailer is horrendous.
Yeah.
The trailer is awful.
But the movie's not much better. I felt like it was sort of a, just very lazy kind of feel of the movie. I didn't like Renee Zellweger in it. I don't really like her very much in the first place. But I also didn't like her in this particularly. I didn't think... I felt like she was sort of acting more than everyone else, you know?
I also
like
she,
Michael Madsen in Sin City.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I also think she kind of looks coked out.
She looks kind of something weird about... She looks very weary in this film. It's kind of strange.
Yeah.
Tired.
But it just generally didn't do it for me.
Well, what about you guys?
I'm wondering, maybe someone disagrees with you, but Hurlburt, what do you think?
What about Chris?
I would say I probably give it a pretty average mark. I would say that ultimately I was probably a little disappointed because I was anticipating really enjoying it. And while I had a good enough time, I don't feel like it was all that I wanted or expected it to be. I share Kevin's predicament in that I don't really like Renee Zellweger, which is going to make this movie a difficult task because every time I'm starting to get really geared up for some sort of witty George Clooney banter or like sort of the rivalry between George Clooney and John Krasinski, Renee Zellweger sort of shows up and like looking all tired and
pouty,
tired and depressed and pouty and sort of saunters around with her
glazed over.
Yeah, it's nothing in particular that I can define about why I don't really like her. It's just, she's just one of those actresses that rubs me the wrong way. I really can't stand the sound of her voice. Mm. Whenever she's talking, it's just the most distracting thing on earth for me.
Do you like Joey Lauren Adams? She's got a very similar voice.
I like her more in the one movie I've seen her in, Chasing Amy, than I do Renee Zellweger in any movie I've seen her in. But, yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
Say that like an insult.
I thought it could have been better. I will say I think my problem is that what it ultimately becomes is The Longest Yard, but with lower stakes.
I disagree.
More like The Longest
Yard. And no Cheeseburger Eddie.
I was talking about the original.
That movie.
Wait, Cheeseburger Eddie's not in the original.
Yeah, he's not in that one either. God.
No, there's no McDonald's tie-in. But yeah.
That's part of the movie.
Because I feel like The Longest Yard, the climactic football game occurs, and Paul Crewe is left with the decision to, does he go out and try to win the game, but then have to go to prison and take that hit for his team of, ragtag convicts? Yes. Or does he throw the game and not play to win and then get out of prison? And I felt like the ending of this movie was kind of a much lower stakes version of that because it's, George Clooney is going to get kicked out of football if he uses a trick play to win this game, but he's already 45 and isn't.
The point is that's not really.
We've got another factor here, Holbert. How do you feel about this film? Do you hate it?
The factor.
the Holbert factor.
No, it's another movie with Seth. It's very much made for me to like. I'm with Chris in one regard that this, like, the only thing I was probably disappointed for it was, but it's not the movie's fault. And it's not some imaginary force's fault. It's the certain critics' fault that labeled it, like the marketing, who labeled it as a screwball comedy. There are some elements of screwball comedy in it, but it's very much more of a romantic comedy of that era. And there's moments where it does get into the screwball stuff, and I'm a very big fan of like the Marx Brothers and stuff like that, and I'll even say the Three Stooges.
They're loads of, they're barrels of laughs.
The Three Stooges.
The Marx Brothers are.
And I really wish there would have been more of that in there, because I was expecting more of that, but there wasn't as much as I was hoping for. But still, it's very much a very fun film. It's Noon Thomas Siegel is easily the best cinematographer working.
Yes, thank you. He's great. He's fantastic.
What other stuff has he done?
He did Three Kings, Usual Suspects.
He's
Brian Singer's DP.
He's
maybe
George Clooney's DP now.
There is Christmas alive in that film. It's very, very well shot.
And just in the I am a fan of Renee Zellweger, and I don't know why.
You thought her performance was really good.
It's great. I mean, it's great. I agree. Just another similar film with Down with Love, which is kind of a throwback, but Down with Love is more.
Down with
Love
is good.
Yeah. Down with Love is really good. More makes fun of those type of films, but kind of like, very much loves it. While Leatherheads is very much, it's trying to do what those films did, and it's not trying to wink at itself while it does it, which I still appreciate very much. And with Renee Zellweger's performance, I really liked it. I remember having a conversation with you with Vertigo, where you were complaining that actors nowadays you're not a fan. You wish that there were less characters, or not less characters, but they weren't be afraid to just do things which are completely the way they acted in older days, where they were completely where it was just completely line delivery and how they and they belted it out, and I thought she did a wonderful job with that. Yeah. Just, amongst all the other people, they're really just how they deliver all their lines is perfect.
I liked her a lot in Down With Love, and she did go over the top in Down With Love, and I did not like her in this, and I don't know if it's her fault or my fault or the script's fault, which is my suspicion, but she just didn't work for me.
You guys want to know how I feel?
I want to hear what Sean
I'm excited. Sean Sterling.
Yeah, sort of meh. I mean, there's things I like, but
you like the football coach.
I didn't like the football coach. I know, because I did laugh quite uproariously at him trying to get the team fired up, and you know that was a funny joke. I think I'm just sort of wary of films made now today to try to recapture the movie making magic of films back then and the sort of the spirit.
Even if they do it well.
Yeah. Well, Sean also doesn't like old movies.
I'm wary going into a film where it seems like that's the goal.
So you didn't like it because you were wary of it going into.
No, I'm sharing.
You couldn't really judge it.
No.
I'm just kidding.
I feel like
I'm patting Sean on the back right now.
Mockingly.
No, in a friendly way.
I mean, I think in general, I'll go on a limb and say that I'm not really a huge fan of a lot of films made sort of pre 1960s, maybe even pre 1950s. And
you just
this
lost
is
all of our audience.
All of our grandparents.
All of the grandparents.
You realize that pre 1960s encompasses pre 1950s.
Yeah, that's why I said maybe.
He'd be willing to be okay with the 50s.
Oh, with
movies.
The 60s, yeah, yeah. Okay.
And this is definitely sort of after that magic. That's sort of it happened one night, sort of like back and forth, romantic, chatty magic. And I mean, I'm not too keen on it really in a lot of ways. And so this isn't really the film for me, because obviously I feel like what they were setting out to do was done well, very well, for what they wanted.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't. There's nothing like wrong. There's no. I don't sense a lot of missteps, but I don't think what they're after is too interesting, in all honesty. I'm not too happy.
I realized going into it that I think in a lot of ways it is kind of a love letter to the 1920s, and I love the 1920s, and I just it would have been very hard for me not to like it. And if you didn't really get into like that decade that much, or even like the films of that decade too much, I can imagine why you might not
like
it too much.
I like period pieces. I like and I like the 1920s as a period.
Yeah.
I don't like how films were made in the beginning.
Right, yeah,
I mean it's not that I don't like
Charlie Chaplin.
Like I hate them or dislike them. It's just it's a medium that's new and that has grown up.
Yeah,
and I don't
feel
the need to revisit the infancy that much, in my opinion.
No. Herbert, I'm glad you're with me on this. It was funny. I actually had the opposite experience, because I didn't know that it was supposed to be a screwball comedy at all. I didn't know, and I was very pleased when that came up, because it was it just really took me off guard. And the scene where they're running from the cops.
Yeah, that's classic costume.
It was classic.
I was very happy.
I was
to see
so because I haven't seen that in a non-cartoon in like so long. I don't know if I can remember the last time I saw that. And I was very pleased. And when and the scene where he's talking to John Krasinski and his sleeve is on fire. It was. I mean, I've seen that joke before, but something about the timing was just. It was perfect for me, and I was laughing really, really hard.
I was. Yeah, I'm definitely.
Yeah.
The timing of that scene was okay. I really disliked all the noises John Krasinski made after
really?
That. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Really. I mean, and I love the 20s. I really, really love the 20s. Yeah. And I'd be all right with that sort of feel to it. I liked the scenes that had that feel.
Right.
But I felt like a lot of it was just really long. And it was focusing on like the football commissioner and all these things that you didn't care about.
The commissioner was one of the complaints I had of the movie, because it kind of, he goes back and forth between being bad and not so bad.
Yeah,
I didn't really know what note they were trying to hit, and then it just kind of dissolved.
I kind of like the commissioner, actually. He was one of the things I did enjoy about the film, yeah. I feel like
he likes rules.
Yeah.
I feel like he was sort of like a window into, I feel like, because I mean, this is sort of a throwback film to like older style filmmaking, but I feel like there is contemporary elements to it that shows that it's definitely been made for a contemporary audience by contemporary people. And I felt like the commissioner was sort of a window into that.
It's true. Introducing an unnecessary bureaucratic figure is a staple of today's films.
Well, I mean, I feel like he was
I was going to say.
I feel like he was written distinctly different than a lot of the other characters, and his he was acted differently, and he was a more realer character. And
he sort of
showed up in like the 11th hour and started like
calling the
cracking
shots.
Skulls, yeah. Sort of calling the shots.
Cracking
like,
skulls.
I sort of enjoyed his cowboy lifestyle. Yeah.
Let it be known to the listening audience that Sean Sterling may be giving you the impression that this commissioner is sort of a hard ass who goes by the rule book and cracks down and really kicks a lot of ass. But in actuality, he's just kind of a corpulent, sweaty guy who sits behind a desk and makes a lot of threats, but you never see him follow through.
And yeah, that reminds me a lot of, I remember I was on a forum discussing No Country for Old Men, and a lot of people were talking about how Tommy Lee Jones is like, you know, really wants to make a difference in the world and really wants to change things. And then someone brought up the valid point that every time you see him, he's like drinking coffee at a desk or like pushing pencils around.
Well,
kind of telling old
stories. A different discussion. But I think Chris is incorrect, because I mean the commissioner does sort of like, he does intimidate a lot of the other
characters.
Well,
he has that attitude.
He brings characters into line. I mean, he's not a cowboy. He's not a figure you'd idolize, but he's sort of an interesting character.
He's not interesting.
He's invigorating. He's the most incredible man
there
I've ever seen.
There is no moviegoer in America except Sean Sterling.
Who comes out of
Leatherheads, and when asked about the movie, says, "Meh. It was okay, but that commissioner, he was great."
Because
it was just so hokey and old-fashioned that he came in and started regulating, and that's when I knew I was watching a movie.
George Clooney and John Krasinski should have been after him.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, there it is on the table. That's how I felt about it.
One problem I kind of had with it, which didn't detract that much, was that during the final game, when there's a big emphasis on the fact that when they can't break the rules, it's just not very fun to watch. I like that, but I don't feel like they set that up as much earlier.
The only rule that he didn't like that they imposed on him was when they couldn't win because they didn't have a ball. And he's like, oh, that's not a fair rule. The rules are dumb.
I mean, and the frustrating thing is that's such an easy fix. Just put a scene in one of the first scenes.
It's a one-line fix. I love breaking rules.
Yeah,
breaking
yeah, yeah.
heads.
Yeah.
What was the thing they keep referencing?
Picking
a
poke.
Like
the pig in the poke.
No, the crunchy Eddie or something like that. The crusty Bob.
Crusty Bob.
I kept wondering, what was it?
I kept thinking of the Buck and Bronco.
I should say, I think that the trick play they run at the end of this, I think, is the best trick football play I've seen in a football movie. It's extremely good.
It wouldn't be possible in today's football.
Well, and that's kind of what I liked, actually, was that, that is something that could only happen then in the first pro football games, and there were no video cameras and no... And I kind of liked how they took advantage of that error and did stuff that you wouldn't have been able to do if it took place nowadays, you know?
And punched out his opposing team.
I liked the very first depiction of pro football. When you see the cow.
I don't know. I didn't like the cow close-up. I liked the cow shot, and then they get a close-up, and I was like, that's a little... It's a bridge too far.
Kevin, did you at least like the bulldog and the leather?
Did I at least like that? No, I especially
like
did not like that.
The cow shot reminded me of the cow shot in Jackass 2, actually. I was wondering if...
I don't remember much about Jackass
2. It's a very funny part of Jackass.
You've seen Strange Coons. He's like the guy who would well-verse himself in the areas of Jackass. He is the it boy now.
I wonder how many people in America or even the world have in under a 5-minute span talked about how awesome Jackass 2 is and talked about how awesome the commissioner for
Jackass
is.
I wasn't talking about how awesome Jackass 2 is, although it is a funny movie.
Just saying it's a funny movie.
Whoever likes the commissioner.
I mean,
he understands the power of
that man. Because, like, you guys were complaining
about... This is insane.
Well, as far as... I like what he does for, like, the story, because, like, you guys said, you were complaining about, as far as, like, the movie, like, he was... This the whole movie is kind of set up for that. He's a guy that doesn't play by the rules, and his dialogue exchange...
He doesn't play by the rules.
George Clooney doesn't want to play by the rules. He doesn't like that.
Well, the commissioner also doesn't play by the rules.
I mean, he doesn't apply it necessarily when he says, it doesn't have to... I don't like the rules of football and stuff, but just like how he goes about it, and then when he hits the roadblock, and then, you know, it comes down to, like, you know, that when it's finally introduced to the end, that's his roadblock, he's like, do you want to continue on, like, what you're doing, or do you want to play it safe? you know, that's I like the commission when he shows up, and I like that person.
To me, it feels like David Mamet wrote a book called The Three Uses of the Knife about drama. And he said that...
David Mamet is an idiot.
Oh, man, don't even start. But he said that... Somebody had written a play, and he felt that it lacked the edge that he wanted to have. So in the first scene, he had a guy suspiciously put a gun into a drawer. Yeah. And that's how the commissioner feels to me. It's like, well, okay, you're putting that in there because you want it to be dramatic, but you haven't built it in. It's not coming organically out of the plot.
Also, David Mamet likes to masturbate to himself talking, so...
Well,
I like doing that, too.
I like masturbating while listening to
David Mamet. I'll tell you what, I should just look up the commissioner's name and use him as the forgettable villain for movies.
No. He is committing.
He's the closest... Well, yeah. No, I'd say he's the closest.
CC's the closest thing to the villain.
Give the people what they want.
What's up with the weird scene where Cece sort of like tries to invite
that was Wigger so strange. That was bizarre. That was out of left.
I was wondering if that was just like an old pickup line saying I was talking to this beautiful woman. You know what I mean?
That's what I was wondering.
Right.
I prefer not to think that. Though. Yeah. I prefer to think it's a menage a trois to make it.
It's just weird because he's not hitting on her at all in any other point in the movie. No. And then one line he does and then goes back to what he was doing.
Yeah.
I did want to say that I was actually surprised because I, despite having no real interest in real life sports, I like sports movies pretty consistently. But I was actually, and I generally do not like romantic comedies. I liked the back and forth between Renee Zellweger and George Clooney.
It's
and it's weird because I generally do not like snappy, sassy dialogue that doesn't feel real. No. And this was that, but I really liked it.
I don't like sassy dialogue. I like quick-witted dialogue.
Yeah, well, it was. I think the reason it works is because it does take place in, I feel like, sort of a glorified picture of the 1920s. Mm-hmm. And it is over the top, especially in the screwball element. So with that dialogue being over the top, it worked. It worked.
You know, it was ghostwritten by Diablo Cody.
I would not want to see that.
You just did.
I didn't think those scenes worked very well, in my opinion. I think
they would work fine without her. I thought the dialogue was okay.
My biggest problem was with her.
Yeah,
in all honesty.
I was surprised at how much I liked the train scene that when they're sleeping on bunk beds.
I love that scene.
I thought that was surprisingly good, but. Just in general, didn't the Mary character from There's Something About Mary, but she's Renee Zellweger instead of hot Cameron Diaz.
Yeah, she.
I think Zellweger is better looking than Cameron Diaz.
Oh, really?
Even at her,
I don't think Cameron Diaz is very attractive.
Even the mask. Renee Zellweger,
oh, not really. I'd say at their best, Renee
Zellweger. Cameron
Diaz.
Renee Zellweger looks like she's hiding pool balls in her cheeks at all times.
And her bra.
Yeah. Going out for the winter.
She and John McCain.
It's funny you say that, actually. What?
Renee Zellweger has an interesting look to her, while Cameron Diaz is just... Yeah. She's a person who's hot. I find it something very unique about her.
She's definitely looked really good.
I find that more attractive.
She's definitely looked really good in some films, but she's just... She looks
like what?
Plastic.
There's something
weird.
Yeah, there's something very strange about her skin and this.
It's
like,
worth
it's shiny and plastic.
It's worth noting that Renee Zellweger has, at a relatively young age, put on and lost a lot of weight.
Yeah,
so that could play a role in taking it out on her skin.
Sure, I wanted to say
so is Christian Bale, so no sympathy.
No.
No sympathy.
I don't think I need to tell you that there's a difference between bulking up by lifting weights and bulking up by eating Twinkies. You know? It has a different effect on your body.
Never mind, Chris wins. I realized recently I tend to be attracted to girls with minor chipmunk-like features.
And you think that holds true for Renee Zellweger?
It holds true for Yes, yeah. Definitely.
Are you a big fan of that scene in Sword of the Stone?
There's
a hot squirrel in that.
It's the most, because the Sword and Stone are...
It's a weird scene.
It's a different scene. Yeah, Sword and Stone's not too good of a movie, but there's one memorable moment in it where the boy gets turned into a squirrel by Merlin, and at the end of it, like, this female squirrel comes up, and, like, the squirrel falls in love with the boy, and, like, the boy's constantly trying to push her away because he's a boy, and that's a squirrel. And then... Merlin changed him back into a boy, and then, like, the female squirrel realized what's happened, and then, like, she's in horror, and then she, like, runs back, And then, like, there's a final shot of, like, the boy, right? He's like, oh, see, I'm a boy. And then he walks away. And there's one final shot of the female squirrel looking in this, like, utter heartbreak at the fact that her one true love has left her. And then that's the end of the scene. You never see the squirrel again.
That's really sad.
And that's just, it just freaks me out, that scene.
Yeah.
What was everyone's favorite joke?
I want to say the costume switch. That
especially
was,
the end where I especially like the way the voice George Clooney put on at the end where he's like, I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah, that was
a
good.
Crew.
Yeah, that
part was funny where he hijacked that guy's suicide blanket. Kevin, what was your favorite joke?
I can't really think of one that
we'll
I enjoyed.
Come back
okay,
to you.
All right.
Chris?
My memory's a little hazy, but probably... if you would qualify the final trick play as a joke, it was probably that.
Sure.
Well, yes. the look that George Clooney gives John Krasinski when, like, he doesn't realize what has happened, the look on his face is pretty great.
Yeah, George Clooney, I liked his facial acting in this.
Yeah, it's a perfect vehicle for his head nods and bobbing up and down. Looking charming.
Yeah.
Well, he's always fun to watch.
Yeah.
But the movie isn't.
Yeah,
I do. I get the sense like the movie a little more than Kevin or Sean do. I thought it was good.
One scene I actually might have been my favorite joke was I know the music was by Randy Newman. Was that Randy Newman playing the band?
Yeah.
I thought it was when he.
Was him. I didn't realize that.
When he picks up the bottle and smashes the guy.
That was
great.
That was classic.
Even just the joke of him continuing to play during the bar fight, just that endeared me a whole lot.
I agree. I feel like this movie was best when, just like Randy Newman, when it's not being terribly genuine.
Yeah.
I felt like there was a lot of genuine aspects to this, and not enough fun.
I could understand that. I wouldn't have argued with a movie that was more fun.
Right.
You don't like
less fun.
You don't like Randy Newman's sort of emotional balance.
His You've Got a Friend in Me.
Not like movie soundtracks. Like his. His independent work.
That's
what it sounds like. That's more like Louis Armstrong.
Yeah. Probably like one of the other disappointments. Like this, I'm sure George Clooney wanted to do it, but I guess probably another thing where the studio wouldn't let him. I wish the whole movie would have been in black and white.
I was thinking the same thing watching it.
There's that flashback during the war that's in black and white. I was very happy to see that. So hopefully
on
the
DVD,
maybe.
So. Or even if not, we can just turn all the colors on the DVD.
That works all the time, right?
Rate it now?
Sure.
Go around?
Hot or not?
Seth?
I will give it an 8.
Ooh, that's high.
I keep in mind I have a different scale. We all use our own scales.
We all.
Yeah, this
seven,
is nice.
Yeah, 8 for you is a little bit above Doomsday.
Yeah.
As it is for me.
I gave it a 6, because it was not offensively bad, but it was not not good, certainly. I mean, there are good parts and bad parts, and it evened out to a 6.
I would also give it a 6. I should say, I did, you know, I enjoyed myself at points, so I can't in good conscience give it any lower than that.
Herbert, how did you feel?
I'm a little back and forth on it. It would be, right now it's either 7 or 8.
Pick one.
Well, you can
right
be 7.5 too.
What?
Just do it.
No, like, I don't believe in
points. you don't like decimals?
Just pick one.
Right now it'll be a 7, mainly because of this, the thing where I thought there was going to be more screwball elements, but I imagine if I see it again, it would get an 8. But 7 for right now.
Well, when we see it again as a group, we can talk about it.
That'll
be a re-rating.
That'll be an interesting podcast.
I will give it a 5, because it is okay. As the number system should work, in the middle, 5, that's how I feel.
I forgot that we had to deal with some lecture from Professor Sean about
our I'm sorry.
So I guess we'll be back with forgettable villains and forgettable films?
Yeah, I think that's a plan. Forgettable villains and forgettable films coming up. Alright, well, forgettable villains... From forgettable films, our host Chris Tognani.
From a very unforgettable man.
Thank you.
Asterisk, though, is that sometimes the films aren't necessarily forgettable, but the villains surely are.
Or at least their names.
Yeah.
Give me a name.
Fuck you! That's my name!
Stumpy Joe.
Agent Smith.
Frau Blücher.
Kaiser Soze.
Illinois Nazis.
Rocco.
Mad Dog.
Mother.
Garuga.
Kittredge.
Wanda. Willa.
Wilkins!
You can call me Susan if it makes you happy.
This week's entry from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Dr. Walter Donovan.
I've not seen that film, actually.
Oh, really? Well, see, it's a good one.
Yeah. Is that villain really that forgettable? I'll have to.
He's an old man.
He
gets kind of revealed that he's the villain halfway through the movie.
Really?
He's like, really, that guy?
Yeah. he makes the mistake of drinking from the jewel-encrusted chalice.
And he chose poorly.
It's always nice when you find out that the villain, when they reveal who it is and it's just someone kind of not remarkable. Like Lewis Strack in Dark Knight. Although he proves to be remarkable. Yeah,
it's also nice when your villain emerges in like the second half of the film.
Yeah, that's good.
In a predominant hero film. Up next, we have my segment. Kevin, why don't you introduce my segment for me?
Sean Sterling's segment is him trying to convince us of a better name than the Edward Popert Film Club, as if such a thing could exist.
I don't like the name. Everyone else seems satisfied with it, but I am not happy.
And well, you know what?
Exercise and futility.
In order to try to remedy the situation, you'll continue to suggest titles that you know under no circumstances we would ever accept.
It's a good thing this is a democratic process, because any man is free to suggest a new
title. You can change the name of the United States of America?
So the name of this segment, which is an exemplar of the titles that Sean has offered us in the past, is Pod Monkeys.
That's true. And every week I come, or presume this is the first week. I mean, it might end with this week.
Maybe.
I'm going to say 5 new titles. And we discuss, if I can convince all of you that this is a better title than Edward Culver's Film Club, which I think all the titles I've come with you today are, change the name, and then we might be talking, calling ourselves something different. Well, we'll see. We'll see. This might be the first and last episode of Pod Monkeys.
Yeah. Well, let's hear some titles.
Here's the first one. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a pod.
Oh, scratch that.
That really set the tone. You're really going to wow us with the second one.
Harkening back to your love of old movies. Right?
I do like Gone with the Wind. The podcast of Dr. Moreau.
That's not notable enough of a film to...
emphasized cast as if that was in the... You were like that. You said it as if the title of the movie was The Isle Cast of Dr. Moreau. You're like The Podcast of Dr. Moreau.
Dynamite Dave and the Podcast Brunch Bunch.
That's stupid.
Why brunch?
Because you can eat. You can listen to our podcast in the before, lunch, after breakfast period. Like
any recorded media.
But that's recommended. It's recommended. You can help me digest it.
I don't recommend that.
Yeah, you kind of won me over at the beginning with Dynamite Dave.
Yeah,
fun character of ours. But then you immediately lost me with the rest of you.
That's a spicy pod ball.
That's a spicy meatball.
That's a spicy meatball.
Pod ball. I don't like that phrase. I don't like that word.
Sounds like a 70s film. Right
It looks like we don't like the first four. Maybe the last one will win us over.
Here we go.
Well, actually, I don't have a last one. Upon closer examination, I only have 4. Next week, I promise you 5.
Can I suggest a
sure,
perfect
make a
title for you? Okay. You can call me Pod, and you can call me Cast, and you can call me Podcast. You don't have to call me Edwin Pobert Film Club.
That's a good one.
That's a long title.
It is a long title.
It's sort of an epic title.
It's an epic title that references an epic man.
So what was you guys' favorite?
I don't have a favorite.
I like the Dynamite Dave's Midnight Brunch Bunch or whatever you call it.
Oh, Dynamite Dave and the Podcast Brunch Bunch.
Midnight Brunch Bunch is much better.
My favorite thing about this segment is last week that you didn't have one ready.
So, everyone out there in podcast land. This is Sean Sterling saying goodbye. Everyone say your goodbyes.
Goodbye.
Bye.
All right.
Adios.